Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, Tanahashi announces his retirement eventually. In the lazy river of wrestling criticism, we go through Wrestle Dream and the follow-up AEW Dynamite. And in the lazy river, or not in the lazy river, in the Vader Club, Steiner Brothers versus Doom from Capital Combat 1990. Yes, the RoboCop pay-per-view. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. I was going to throw you to a question. I have no idea what the question was, so say something, Chris.
Well, my parents are in town this week.
Are they?
Oh, yep.
You buried the lead. You didn't even tell me on that one. Okay.
Well, I don't really want to talk about it. I love the pre-show banter segment. It's good to see family.
Duly noted. Let's just get into it then. Attention must be paid. Rest in peace to Joe Coff, who served as chief operating officer of Ring of Honor while the company was owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, passing away at the age of 73 of cancer. I will admit I have never been a big Ring of Honor fan, but I did get to watch a lot of it when I got DirecTV and finally got HDNet and stuff. I don't have a lot to say about Joe Coff that wouldn't be said better by Dave Meltzer or anything else of that nature, and I am not the biggest Ring of Honor fan. Chris, do you have anything on this?
I'm sorry, I don't have a lot to offer.
Then we will move on and be respectful of such things. Moving on to what I just teased, Hiroshi Tanahashi has revealed when his wrestling career will come to an end. During this week's New Japan Pro Wrestling, King of Pro Wrestling, after his match, he announced his final bout will take place on January 4th, 2026 at the Tokyo Dome. This will give him an entire year to do the retirement dream match, showered with gifts, whatnot campaign. Tanahashi's been looking a bit broken of late, but he still can pull out a banger here and there. I came in a little late to the party. I was watching New Japan, I'd say around 2012 or so on the rig. But yeah, I mean, you can't deny, I mean, I've seen him live on WrestleMania weekends. I've seen him live for New Japan shows here. And he's fantastic. He is the ace for a reason.
Yeah. I think his final year, because of his body, is probably not going to go as hard, but I do expect at least 3-4 really good matches this year from him.
Does he get as now head of New Japan? Does he book himself for one last IWGP run?
I think he books himself for a title contention that he loses.
Okay, we can go with that. Off the top of your head, do you have a favorite match?
Tanahashi? I got to tell you, I think the one where Okada comes up short, I believe it was, how many matches did Okada and Tanahashi have?
I want to say four or five.
Four or five. So it would have been like the penultimate match in their series where Okada's in tears at the end of it. I just thought that match was super well worked. And then Okada crying at the end of it really just made that main event feel so big. I believe it was the Tokyo Dome 2013 show. So for me, that's my favorite Tanahashi match.
Yeah, it would have to be an Okada match for me as well. I don't have a spectacular Rolodex of a memory for my New Japan watching anymore because it was all like, you know, watching like tons of G1 matches at once in like one sitting, and you're just like, okay. It's not that they weren't good. It's just you watch a lot of great wrestling one match after another, just kind of dulls your senses a little bit. A lot of news from Japan, which is interesting. The Young Bucks also announcing that they will be at Wrestle Dynasty January 5th, 2025. I mention this because there is a rumor that Kenny Omega may make his comeback in New Japan at this like New Year's show or whatever for New Japan. And I said, if Tony Khan allows that to happen, he should be fired as booker of his own company. What do you think of that? You're going to bring back Kenny Omega in Japan as opposed to AEW television? Are you nuts? No.
That would be completely consistent with the level of undisciplined booking that I've come to expect from the company. We'll talk about the Danielson main event. So would that surprise me? No. Should he be fired as the booker of his own company? Yeah, probably.
Yes. Because if you it doesn't matter if, oh, you know what, I'd really like to do it because I have such a connection to Japanese wrestling. I don't care. You're under a contract to my company, and we're only getting $633,000. No, you cannot go to Japan. You know who can do a show in Japan, though? It's been announced that WWE superstar Shinsuke Nakamura, of which Chris is wearing the shirt, will be taking part in Noah's Nippon Budokan event on January 1st, 2025. You know who's not doing anything right now on the main roster? Nakamura. This is a perfect person to go over and do some goodwill for WWF.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He's always a easy go-to guy and every bit on the profile of Tanahashi, and maybe more of an immediate draw in Japan because they don't get to see him as often.
Yeah. Wrapping up Japan news, which seems to be the major thing today for some reason because there's a lot of crossover. Your new IWGP heavyweight champion, Zack Sabre Jr. What do you think? Former Cruiserweight Classic loser? No. I like Zack Sabre Jr. I understand that wrestling fans love him. I don't think this is a decent business decision necessarily, but it's a good work rate decision.
Yeah, good work rate decision. Zack Sabre Jr., it's weird because at once his character does have a personality, but I don't think he's a strong character.
I think he's a much better heel than babyface.
Agreed.
Because then he can do his grapple effing around and I used to call it Bugs Bunny offense when I watched it in PWG, where he's like playing with his food and tying up guys and just for cheap laughs and things like that. And it was, you know, it was good for that Reseda crowd and stuff. And then you'd watch it on New Japan television and I'd be kind of like, all right, whatever, dude. But you know, it's one of those things where I respect the hell out of Zack Sabre Jr. He's just not one of my favorite wrestlers. And I keep waiting, and everybody kind of, because of how wrestling criticism has gone in the last few years, people really overpraise Japan as a territory when it's at a low point right now. But, you know, I hope New Japan comes back to prominence and reloads. I've watched New Japan shows of late, and I've just not been terribly impressed, to be honest.
No, and whenever I occasionally pop one on if I'm cleaning, I can't. It doesn't hold my attention. It doesn't.
Here's one I'm going to tee up for you. I'm almost afraid to tee it up for you, though, Chris. Donald Trump is expected to do an interview this week with The Undertaker on his 6 Feet Under podcast. Boy, what a scintillating issues-based conversation I'm sure that's going to be.
I almost want to hear them have a meandering conversation about wrestling.
There's going to be wrestling. So, like, when you do that tombstone, is it real?
I love when you do the tombstone. One of my favorite things that you used to do is you used to walk on the ropes. How did you do that? How did you not fall?
Was that hard?
Yeah.
You know, if there's two guys I don't want to listen, it's kind of like that clip of Bill Burr and Joe Rogan talking about health or something. And Burr goes, "You're not a doctor. Shut up." I get going on the Everyman podcast and stuff like that, and it's fine. You're running for president. You've already been on Theo Von. You've already been on these other goofballs. And then Kamala's over here doing Call Her Daddy, which isn't exactly a cultural touchstone for a lot of people, especially post the titillation being gone from it when it's now become. I don't understand politics anymore, Chris. I am so ready for this election. I'm ready for 2028, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, no, I've taken like a politics nap, and I feel like the most rational thing to do is like you still vote and stuff, but like not you don't actually have to pay attention.
No,
It is like a wrestling show where you're dumber for having paid attention to the storylines because you just see the glaring plot holes. It's not worth it. You just, you know, do the bare minimum.
We've just evolved into going on crowd. Like, I don't even know how many listeners The Undertaker has for his podcast.
No, but Mark Calaway has clearly done himself. He's done limited amounts of political thinking. He has political thoughts.
Oh, yes.
But I'm not, yeah, but he's done limited amounts of political thinking. And I don't think anyone in that situation ever benefits from availing themselves to a microphone. You should sit down and write this stuff out for a while.
I want like a white months. Paper from Mark Calaway.
No, I'm not even saying it like, dude, I'm not even saying it like that. I mean, like, you know, whatever issue it is, like Mark Calaway apparently likes to talk about cops. Well,
law enforcement. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Like then if you're going to do that, then sit down and really bone up on that, you know, read some white. I'm not saying write a white paper,
but read
some, right. Like, you know, and actually kind of work it through. And in most cases, guys like this have not done that kind of level of work, and it shows, and it doesn't do them any favors.
Yeah, and it will appeal to the same level of audience too. So yeah. It's yeah, so we'll get there. Numbers this week: AEW 633,000.20 in the demo, NXT 639,000.18 in the demo. I consider this a tie, but there are people that are saying, oh, that means AEW won because they did better in the demo. But it's like, I don't care.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. demo Cope is back and better than ever, baby.
It's not a great number. And you can blame baseball. You can blame politics. You can blame whatever it is. It's not a good number.
One of these years, they're going to get rid of baseball, and then AEW is really going to be able to show what they can do.
I am all for getting rid of baseball.
No, baseball's cool.
I hate baseball. Dude. I will watch the playoffs. And
I love the whole past. I'm not even following it right now, but baseball's great.
I played it for a number of years, and I wasn't very good at. But I was like also the only left-hander in our league. So I like led the league in on base percentage because I'd just get hit every time I went to the plate. And so they're like,
help the team. Help the team.
Well, they also go, don't be afraid of the ball. I go, I know I'm going to get plunked. I'm going to get hit in the head again by an 80 mile an hour fastball by this 6'4", 13 year old who's just gunning it at me. Yes, baseball. Let's ban it. No. That'll do it for news, because there's not a lot going on just yet. It'll all happen tomorrow after we've already gone to tape. But that'll do it, and we'll go to the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we had time for, starting with ice-cold takes on AEW's Wrestle Dream. Overall, pretty good pay-per-view, I thought. The talking point is, of course, the finish, which ended with Bryan Danielson getting absolutely murder-deathed by Jon Moxley, and everybody talking about being a downer of a ending to end the show, et cetera, et cetera. I am all for downer endings in wrestling. I just don't like the instincts of Bryan Danielson to troll the audience when you don't know if you're going to be back. I am going to be one of those people who says, I think Bryan Danielson did a disservice to AEW in a lot of not wanting to be a star, just wanting to be a good wrestler, which is like saying, hey, you could have a number one hit, but you just want to be the bar musician at your local night spot or whatever. I understand he wants to eschew fame and superstardom and doesn't want to overshadow other guys or stuff. But to me, if you're coming to AEW to wrestle, to uplift that product, you use your fame and stuff to help everybody. And I felt it was kind of malpractice not to. I also thought the original plan was probably better. If Darby Allin winning this title and then Bryan Danielson getting destroyed, much more emotionally satisfying, I think. Because I think people wanted the chance to say goodbye to Bryan Danielson. His career was cut short. He got the tearful farewell in WWE. But this was for the work rate guys. This is for the Ring of Honor people. This is for the people that followed him all those years who may not be able to get back if he doesn't get back in the ring. He's going to have neck surgery. You don't know how that thing's going to heal. You may not get that chance. And him deciding that he wants to be trollish to the wrestling fans and have the sad ending, in his hometown. I just strongly disagree with all of these, all these instincts right now. And that's the top story for me coming out of this show, especially as we'll get into when we get into Dynamite. There was absolutely no effect on the beginning of Dynamite. They stretchered him out and there was no bring all the talent out for a moment of silence, you know, thanking Bryan Danielson for his work. There was no emotion. There was no pall over. There was no sense of dread over the show because Bryan Danielson's career is over. It was lights up action. Welcome to AEW wrestling kind of a thing. It was all a waste to me, but Chris, your thoughts. I'm sorry. I've rambled enough.
No, I hated this finish. I hated this title reign. And while I will undoubtedly be laying a pox on the house of Tony Khan for this, I very much echo your sentiment that Bryan Danielson's run in AEW, while being presented as selfless and giving, was in fact selfish. And he should have been checked on this by Tony Khan. So there, now we circle back to him. Once he pitches to Tony Khan, hey, give me a retirement run. If I lose the title, I'm done. That sort of storyline. Let's commit the company to this. This will be the centerpiece storyline for the company. You have to get a sort of a commitment that Danielson's in on this for a year. And that's what we're doing. Even if it involves the world title being in absentia from AEW television for several months because of the neck surgery or whatever else. It's not as though this company doesn't have enough belts. It's much more damaging to get the belt off of Swerve Strickland, put it on Bryan Danielson, promise people a whole bunch of dream matches, not really deliver on much of anything other than a very competent, highly competent and entertaining match with Jack Perry, and an above average and certainly well above what you expected from Nigel McGuinness, given his age, performance by Nigel McGuinness in a nothing burger sort of feud. We didn't get great stories. We didn't get great near-miss moments, near-death experiences that we got to get through, biting our nails and go, okay, fine, thank God that wasn't the last one. Instead, Bryan Danielson, selfishly, I'm not saying he's selfish for needing neck surgery. I'm saying he's selfish for going, well, I need neck surgery. Guess I'm going to kill my career in my hometown to this young up-and-coming kid, John Moxley, and get the belt on John Moxley instead of Darby Allin. The path to how Moxley won the title was really stupid. It made Darby Allin look like an idiot. And then we have the beatdown angle of Bryan Danielson, which I also thought had hats on top of hats, where Darby Allin eventually makes the save, and then Wheeler Yuta decides to turn on Danielson then, just to heighten the tension and heighten the drama and the heighten the Judas Iscariot effect of Wheeler Yuta. Wheeler
Jim Judas. Ross burying people for not coming out quicker.
Right. I thought this whole ending angle stunk for any number of reasons. And right down to if this is Danielson's last match because of the neck surgery, I think there are a ton of people who were in that arena that night and went, nah, I couldn't possibly go down like this. This can't possibly be the end. So they didn't even get a chance to really say goodbye. I think it's really cruel that his WWE run ended not on his own terms. And this time where he really got to set the contours of his final exodus, he chose to do something that was selfish. And to your point, following it up on Dynamite, it meant nothing. For all these people who the BCC are attacking, every single one of them should basically be saying, I'm not going down like Danielson now. Like, yeah. It should almost become like a recurring refrain. Like, you're not going to do me like Danielson. Like, we are not going to, and BCC can still put them out. But, like, everyone should basically be looking at this Danielson moment as, you kill the hero. You know, what you did scares me.
It should be Death of Superman level.
Yeah.
Kind of like in the DC universe, you're like, oh my God, what? You know, that kind of thing. What's next? Everybody should be a little bit on edge, to be honest with you, about this. Instead, we're getting like John Silver running after a pickup truck. And it's like, oh God, we'll get back to that. And we'll get back to Dynamite in a moment. I thought, you know, even the match layout, Danielson wasn't giving anybody a chance to really, really cheer for him all that strong. Every time he got a little bit of offense, he'd get shut down by Moxley. It was
Marina Shafir does not need to be a part of Bryan Danielson's final match.
Right.
Like that, she added nothing. And I'm not like she, even her standard woman who is a femme fatale outside the ring work just didn't add anything to this match.
And then, you know, for other matches, just a few random thoughts. Look, Ospreay, Ricochet, and Takeshita was really good. I understand why a lot of people loved it. I hated the ending with Fletcher coming out and hitting Ospreay in the back of the head with a screwdriver. I understand why they did it. But still, it was still kind of like we watched all that just to start another angle when I want a completion of an angle instead. My favorite match was actually Mark Briscoe versus Chris Jericho, because it was, and I never thought I'd say that about a Chris Jericho match, but it was just an old school match with personal stakes where Briscoe beat the hell out of Jericho, and Jericho had a little bit of heat, but Mark Briscoe overcame. My problem is, it seems like every match on this show is now going to be rematched immediately, including Willow and Mariah. And my one last note, just speaking of rematches, I think Private Party had to go over. The story you're telling is that they're
God, yeah.
Geeks. And then they bury them. I mean, they show the video package, you know, talking about this is our chance, blah, blah, blah. The Young Bucks come into the ring and cut a promo on them. And then they lose. And it's supposed to be the, oh, you tried pop with the standing ovation app. No. No, there's no great Pyrrhic victory in this. And what they're going to try and do probably is wait like 3 years and try and rerun it, and then they'll get the win. But this isn't 1976. If you're going to tell this story, let the story have the ending where they redeem themselves. It was just one of those things where I just went, no, this match is booked incorrectly to me. But
that gets into the Bucks characterization and sort of this metaverse story where now Moxley and the BCC are going to fix the company and clean this company up and change things. And you have the young up-and-comers who say that AEW can be good, which implies that AEW is currently bad.
Yes.
Right now. Yeah, like that. This company could be really good. I'm like looking at Action Andretti. I'm like, yes, Main Event Action Andretti is the answer to what my wrestling soul needs.
But I mean, the whole point of this angle is there's something wrong with the company and they won't tell us what it is. Moxley, right now, we've gone a month now almost where Moxley is just angry at AEW and talking cryptically. We don't even know why Pac is involved in this or how he got involved. We don't know why he's palling around with Marina Shafir this whole time. And there's no answer to this because all it is it goes into the office politics story, which stupid in its own way. There's no grand. I mean, Shane McMahon has revealed
Abrams' little magic box, right?
Yes.
What's inside the mystery box? And his answer is it's more interesting. Know there's a box.
Do you think that AEW has just become too sports entertainment? Fine, we'll make that meta story or whatever, and you can clean it up, and you can go around beating up geeks, and eventually get to whoever you need to beat up. That'll get the, ooh, we didn't see that coming or whatever, which I think it's actually going to be Chris Jericho. I think Chris Jericho is getting taken out by the BCC next week so he can go tour with Fozzy and then come back as a savior of AEW because it's time for another character change out of him. That's my Babe Ruth calling his shot thing. But overall, I want to know why this is so personal to Jon Moxley, and it's just, nope, I'm just going to be cranky. I'm going to beat up people that you'd have no emotional connection for, and I'm going to leave. And it's just...
And the implied message originally was it was anger at the Young Bucks. And so then you see the locker room yelling at the Young Bucks, you're supposed to do something. And I'm like, wait, are we going to try to turn the Young Bucks baby face coming out of this?
It's happening. I'm telling you now, what's going to happen is the Bucks and Okada are going to turn face, and Jack Perry is going to remain heel. Because I think in that segment with the birthday cake and the organs, great promo, I think they were actually being honest about the cake, and that's what the story's going to be. And then Perry came in and ruined it. I think Jack Perry's going to remain a heel, and the other three are going to turn babyface because Okada's getting big pop saying bitch all the time, and all these. It's just going to be a mess, to be honest.
Right. I find wrestling where I feel dumber for having analyzed the stories to be really unpleasurable. Like no work rate can save that.
See, this is how I feel about Adam Cole and MJF.
I also hate this Adam Cole and this retcon of Adam Cole and MJF hurt my brain.
Yes, I was the devil.
My brain.
I became the devil. Evil incarnate. To go after MJF. And now we're going to do the superhero, supervillain exposition origins. And MJF's like, I thought I could trust. And it turns out I can't. Why don't you just say I hate you? And say I want to punch you in the face. But instead it's going to be, I'm not going to face you yet. Muh-ha-ha. I'm going to dangle this as a carrot in front of you. It's a... this whole... Because they did this like three times on the show. Because they did it with like Kyle Fletcher too. It's like, you want to know why I did it? Too bad. It's like, mystery, dude.
No, and it's very increasingly obvious that one, they don't have a good promo for how I did it, or two, they literally don't even have an idea of how I did it or why I did it.
Yes, I know. I was just, I'm watching this and they're doing the exposition. I mean, people will tell you, it's personal. They're cutting pro. No, it's not. They're not doing it. They're doing the monologue story when they have the hero or villain captured or whatnot. It's not a personal thing. You know, just say you're responsible
you
for my injury.
You know why I did it? I don't know.
Because I'm a bad person and I do bad things. And instead it's like, because it made MJF make sense, and he doesn't need to make sense. He's the bad guy. It's like, I can't trust anymore, so I became evil. I don't want a sympathetic villain. I want Tully Blanchard, who's a jerk. I did it for money. There you go. Boom. We're in there. That said, my other thoughts on AEW wrestling. I liked Mercedes and Amanada. I think babyface Amanada, they took away the one thing that got her to the dance, which were the hard chops. I was waiting for the hard chop on Mercedes and hear the pop sound across. And it would have made a nice bridge with the Emi Sakura match as well.
What if Mercedes wasn't willing to do them?
Somebody said that. Somebody said, well, maybe she took a chop last week that was a little tough and she didn't want to take it. I was like, Mercedes is game for everything. I do love that every time they're in San Jose, she does a little homage to Bailey. She did this time with the sunset flip powerbomb into the turnbuckle on her. And then I really liked Lio Rush and Shelton Benjamin.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was a really good enhancement match. That was a really, really good enhancement match. Shelton looks great. He feels, I mean, Shelton and MVP just feels like a $1 million act.
MVP is the heel, straight ahead manager we've been waiting for.
Yes.
The Gary Hart type. And I'm, as opposed to, say, Stokely, who's already cutting jokes again or whatever. Lio Rush, to me, I know he was a babyface in this match, but Lio Rush is the perfect heel high flyer. He's cocky. He's arrogant. His offense looks like it's meant to inflict pain. If he ends up joining after getting destroyed, I'd be fine with this. I'd be fine with him being part of the Lashley-Shelton crew. Yeah, and the promo itself was spectacular. It rehabbed Shelton. You know, I like that Shelton's finisher is something he can hit out of nowhere as opposed to a big setup move. Shelton Benjamin's always been a favorite of mine.
I love all of his offense. It just all looks good, doesn't it?
Yes. When I think of Money in the Bank, I think Shelton Benjamin. Because he, in those first couple, he did some stuff on that ladder that is insane for a man of that athleticism. He's just so good. And I love just having, I love having MVP going around handing his business card like he's Satan trying to make a deal with everybody. He doesn't care who it is. I'm just going to give you this business card. You think about it. A straight ahead heel who isn't trying to get laughs and isn't trying to get pops. I just this is what I want in my wrestling. And he delivered it. I loved everything about this segment.
Yeah, no, just for me with Shelton, it's not just the high flying spots, although he always executes those well. It's always been like the kicks and the punches and the in between stuff that some people, I mean, like in recent weeks, have talked about Javon Evans. Like, Javon Evans doesn't have that stuff. And like Shelton Benjamin, by comparison, has always had great punches, great kicks, great intermediate suplexes just to kind of get from point A to point B, the little detail work, and then also the high spots and everything. Everything just has a crispness. Everything just has an execution. He's awesome.
It's your turn. You can keep us in AEW. You can go elsewhere if you choose.
Man, is there much else I got to say about AEW? I don't really know that there is. We talked
I have a button on it then. I liked Top Flight in Action Andretti's promo after the second brawl. And if the whole point of the BCC story is that Jon Moxley kicks your ass, and then you look into the camera and you cut a promo that says, "We want to fight. We'll see you on Saturday." I'm here for this. If he can rehab everybody's promos in this division by punching them in the face, I'm here for this, Chris, because it's just one of those things where these guys just do these vanilla promos or we'd like to have a really good match with you on. No, give me the heat. Give me the anger. Get mad that somebody kicked your ass. Yes.
I just hate that saying "on collision" evokes laughs from me now.
Yes, it does.
I when he said "on collision," I actually audibly laughed. I'm like, that shouldn't be happening.
Oh, and FTR and the Outrunners are fantastic. Never break them up, but they will eventually. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. right. No. But they're a lot of fun. I mean, I also don't know that there's a ton of money in these two guys or these two teams having a feud. So I would want them to stay friends or whatever. Like maybe like big brother, little brother tag teams.
I think FTR is going to turn on them eventually. I think eventually it's going to be one of these things where FTR outrunners the Outrunners. Like if you saw the training video thing, which was awesome, they only played on Collision. It's like Dax had bleached his mustache. I think Cash is gonna start looking a little bit like Dennis Condrey eventually, you know. We'll just make him scuzzy and whatnot. That was the team to beat versus the Young Bucks on Saturday, not Private Party. Beat the Outrunners. They had enough goodwill going into this. They were over, and you can beat them, and it won't matter to them because they're not necessarily a main event act. Private Party should have a big win the next time they face the Bucks, and I didn't understand that at all. But it is your turn, sir. I've monologued enough.
No, for sure. Let's kick it back to NXT here. I find myself flustered and flummoxed by Lexus King and what we are doing with this guy. But this guy gets into like the all over the place. Who's a heel? Who's a face? I mean, a shot to the Adonis has been doing skeezy, doesn't care about boundaries sort of shtick for like a month and a half now. All of a sudden, the moral of the story, kids, is if you cross enough boundaries, eventually you'll find someone who's got boundaries issues and she'll get with you. There you go. That's the Ashanti the Adonis issue or story.
Well, the Lexus King is more the AEW. Well, we're just going to turn them babyface because we want them babyface right now.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
It's weird because I feel like, I mean, you see Oro Mensah and he seems flummoxed. Like he also is, I mean, he's supposed to be what we're supposed to feel, which is like, is this for real? But I think you just commit to this being for real and see what you've got with him as a baby face. Cause he's not bad.
Dude, he's Lexus King or Oro Mensah?
Lexus King.
Okay.
Yeah. Lexus King's got a lot of personality.
Yeah. I mean, it was fine, and I thought when they first introduced him, he was a babyface, and then he turned heel immediately, and then it's like, and then he goes into a barber shop, and there's an angle there where he gets beat up, and I guess he turns babyface because he got into the fight and stuff. And no, I agree. It's just the characterization is off because they don't really give him anything other than weirdo with a weird beard. That's his character, and that's not much of an ethos in terms of professional wrestling and your motivations for it. Because they're also dancing around the Pillman thing quite a bit. It's like,
right, that was so weird. Why are they dancing around Pillman so much?
Because it has a negative connotation of dying of a drug overdose or whatever, but at the same time, we want to respect the lineage. So it's one of those things where it's like, everybody knows you're Brian Pillman's son, but it's the Braun Breaker problem. You know, like, well, we don't want to call him a Steiner because WWE did not create the Steiners, much like WWE did not create the Pillmans. So we can't call him that name to give him any rub because then people will compare him to his father. And it's like, it's such easy marketing, though. You are the son of Brian Pillman, so you might be a little off. That's all you need. I don't get this. Yeah,
I found it jarring as well. I think
Curtis Axel, the son of Kurt Hennig.
Right. Just lean into this. Other things on here. Ridge Holland and Riley Osborne was a waste of time to me. This whole thing's kind of a waste of time to me. That stuff. And then, I mean, why did Wesley not win this number one contender thing? Are we just getting Ethan Page done in NXT and moving him on to the main roster? Because, like, unless you're going to get the belt back on Ethan Page, I see no reason to do this. And then I just don't see any reason for Trick Williams and Ethan Page to lock horns a second time.
I think it's the size issue. I think with Wesley, Trick would have to sell for a small guy, and they don't want him to do that. I think there's still a little bit of Vince think in the Trick Williams push.
Then you do. You have Wesley ambush him.
Like, I don't know why Javon Evans was in this match.
I don't know either.
Because, my God, is there a guy that...
Wesley basically shows why Javon Evans isn't ready, doesn't he?
He clowned him on that promo, too. I was just like, dude, that's just an absolute burial on screen, and you're letting this happen to a guy who needs a little bit more polish and stuff like that. It's one of those, and we just keep beating him, and we keep beating him, and we keep beating him, and we keep beating him. And you're just like, I know that they think that eventually then the crowd is going to get sympathetic and cheer him, but I think the crowd's going to tune out and go, he's a loser. Let me know when he grows up and gets an offense in there. And then they're going to turn him heel and kill any goodwill.
Oh, that's, yeah, right. No, because, I mean, here's the thing. He's, with his skill set right now, he has even less of an ability to go heel.
It's frustrating. I don't think you belt him, but I don't think you put him on TV every week.
No. I think you develop him out until you, I think you sideline him. Honestly, at this point, you give him a complete image makeover, and you bring him back with a new character. You know, like the Velveteen Dream level of heavy character, like lean into it, something else. Like what they did with Patrick Clark Jr. Yeah. Years ago. Going to Raw here, Kofi Kingston versus Braun Breaker, I thought was booked horribly. Kofi Kingston is a former WWE champion. Belted at WrestleMania. The failures of this were all over the place. It was the actual in-ring action, but also, I get it, Joe T is still new to this, but this is where some notes should be really put in front of him. This guy is a former WWE champion. This should be shocking when Braun Breaker gets a spear out of nowhere. And that should be the match. The match should actually be, for 90% of this match, Kofi Kingston's got Braun Breaker's number.
Yes.
Kind of like the wily veteran hits him with trouble in Paris. And it kind of seems like it's a matter of time before Braun Breaker gets pinned on this one, because Braun Breaker thought that Kofi was the lightweight, but Kofi is the more formidable. I mean, this is also part of the story, right? He's more formidable than Woods. Kofi's already had his moment. Kofi's the established and known quantity. So Breaker should have gotten a lucky spear out of nowhere. Instead, Breaker takes large chunks of this match, leaving Kofi Kingston to sell in a very WWE style. And commentary's not that shocked when Breaker comes over with the victory. Moderately, but not majorly.
Yeah. That whole thing is baffling to me. I agree. It's one of those things where it's like, well, we shouldn't be surprised because Braun Breaker, it's almost Vince think in a way, where it's like, well, Braun Breaker's a big, strong guy, and Kofi's a little guy. So we shouldn't be shocked by that. But it's like, yeah, but...
Dude, skin's on the wall.
But Kofi's been in the Fed for 15 years or so, or whatever it is. He should be a wily veteran who knows how to handle this stuff. I'm going to backtrack to NXT real quick to say something I liked. I liked the Maddie Rynkowski-Stephanie Vaquer match quite a bit. I think they gave Maddie just enough to make her seem legitimate. And Stephanie Vaquer has phenomenal match charisma. Her issue is going to be promos, because she's trying to speak them in a language that's not her native tongue. And she's a little stiff, shall we say, in terms of the acting department. I hope they find a way around this, but I mean, she came off as a star to me in that match. And look, I liked her match with Mercedes back for the New Japan Strong title. Don't get me wrong, but there was something where she was the one in control as opposed to being swallowed up by Mercedes' obvious charisma, where it's like, yeah, she's going to be fine. Putting her with Julia is an interesting choice too, because Julia has a very dominant presence, even if it's not like superstar presence at times to me. It's one of these things where it's like, she's tall, she's lanky, she's slightly awkward. Is that a proper term, I would think, in terms of coming in and out of the ring? There's almost a slouch to her at times with that I find interesting, but still charismatic. And her and Vaquer seem to really gel quite well. But overall, I really liked the Stephanie Vaquer match.
Yeah, and then I gotta tell you, rest of Raw,
meh.
Yeah, right. The best part of this, Tiffy Stratton. Tiffy Stratton. That was a nothing burger main event, but I thought that was a clever finish where all of a sudden Tiffy could pin Liv is now a live option, and that felt like a real live option for like, and it's not Dommy time, it's Tiffy time.
I liked it. Don't get me wrong, I liked it a lot. It was just one of those things where it's just like, Nia's like, you effing moron. I've laid her out here for you to take that. And Tiff, I want Tiffy to be a little bit more conniving to know these things. And it's like almost I want her to play dumb. I don't want her to be dumb necessarily. And this kind of strained it just a little bit with neither.
No, I don't know. I think something's very consistent with her being both conniving and dumb. Like, she's got a plan, but she's so dumb that she's like, no, I don't need to pin her. I already have a plan. I'm stabbing you in the back.
It's like, yeah, I'm so hyper-focused on killing you that I don't realize that I can pin her right now.
No, it's fine. The plan's to stab you in the back. Wait, I just said that out loud.
I just said that out loud, didn't I? I did watch SmackDown. They got good guys over there. It's just I don't have a lot of time, so it's mostly like a watch highlights stuff. They had a LA Knight and Carmelo Hayes had a match. So they're basically setting up the three-way with Andrade where Knight keeps beating both every week or whatever. You know, it's a good wrestling show. They've it seems like it's going to be old Bloodline versus New Line at Survivor Series, which is fine. And they're set up for this Saudi Arabia show, which is always just, it's a spectacle, but it doesn't matter. You know, it's one of the, I mean, that belt that they're, I mean, that belt is nice. And they're telling Saudi Arabia, no, it's a major award, like a Christmas story. But it means nothing. The belt's never going to be defended except at that show. It's a trophy for a trophy's sake, and it's a major show because Saudi Arabia is paying them a buttload of money to come in and do a major show, and they want a major show. So it's fine. It's, you know, but I found Raw just, it was 2 hours and it was still dull for me, and especially like you brought back the War Raiders and they're having issues with Otis and.
I mean, most of these I just don't even think are worth parsing, but I'll just say on that one, that pissed me off too, because it's like the War Raiders should come back and have a 4-on-2 match against 4 goobers where they annihilate all 4 yes. goobers and those guys are terrified of them. Instead, you have Eric and Ivar having to go 50-50 with Otis because, like, it's not even credible to have him just get bowled the F over. So, this is the worst possible re-debut pairing they could have from the tag division, but they should have been top guys.
Especially since you're giving them the War Raiders name back as opposed to the
right.
Viking Raiders
right.
or whatever. You're giving them this new sense of, you know, evil sheen on them. They're more badass than ever. It's like giving Rocco to the Road Warriors. You know?
I would have, man, 4-on-2, 6-on-2, where the War Raiders face 3 tag teams.
Where they're stacking them and just throwing them around.
Just knees. I want to see Jobber Carnage. That's what I want out of the War Raiders.
Yeah, I got nothing else for current wrestling.
That's it, man. Let's get into the Steiners thing because I need to mosey.
Okay, yes, Capital Combat 1990, Steiners versus Doom for the World Tag Team titles. This is after Doom has lost their masks already. The Steiners still, or Scott especially, still relatively early into his career. Like the match that we watched for Fire and Ice was after they had had their WWE run, and Scott is well into his vitamins. and Rick was always just a hoss. But this match was awesome for two reasons. Number one, Scott Steiner knows he's athletic, but he doesn't know how to control his body yet. So he's doing those flip slams and almost breaking his neck every time doing them. And you're just like, dude, calm down. You've only been in the business 2 years. Let's try and live a little. And the most dangerous move done in this match is when Scott throws you outside the ring, because everybody's getting caught up on the ropes every time doing that, and they're almost falling and breaking their neck. I love Ron Simmons selling in this match. It is absolutely fantastic. Butch Reed is always a welcome presence for me. He's a guy that I think never
very
got
underrated. Very his, underrated.
Yeah, because he had a lousy, to me, a lousy WWF run when he was like dyeing his hair blonde, and then Hogan really didn't want to work with him all that much. He was great in Mid-South. If you watch his Mid-South stuff, and that was when he did a 60-minute with Flair during that time, and he was, I mean, that's legendary. And like the angle with him and Buddy Landell, where Buddy Landell sells him, is, look, it's racially insensitive, but it's a fantastic angle where Butch Reed becomes a huge baby face afterwards. But like, this is, Doom is just an awesome team. These are like four muscle bound guys, just and those clotheslines. Good God, they are laying those into the chest every time. Like you feel those clotheslines. You feel every punch, every hit on the back, et cetera, et cetera. I love this match so
Scott
much.
Scott gets over for the Frankensteiner, like the off the ropes Frankensteiner.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot to like in this match in terms of offense. I mean, one just a bit low level move that stood out to me. I thought Reed does an excellent pile driver and an excellent bulldog.
Yes.
Like, if you wanted to just get a textbook, here's what your bulldog should look like. Reed delivers two really good looking ones.
Yeah, and here's what a sit down pile driver should look like, where it looks like it kills the guy, but you're not even touching his head to the mat. It was so good.
Yeah. That's what I feel, especially watching some of these older matches, like this style. I always really appreciate the detail work on spine busters, on pile drivers,
punches,
on bulldogs, on punches, shoulder blocks, shoulder tackles.
Yes. Oh, dude, this is...
There's some great shoulder tackles in this match.
There is one that Steiner, or that Simmons puts on Rick. Like, and it's towards the end of the match, and you're like, at this point, they should be kind of going easy on each other, but he laid into this shoulder tackle, and just, I thought he knocked out Rick Steiner for a second. It was, yeah, these are bad men doing bad things to each other and really laying it in. This early, late 80s, early 90s Hoss Division tag team thing in WCW is one of my favorite things from back in the day.
The one thing I will say is the distraction finish doesn't even really make a ton of sense. They didn't need to do a distraction finish there.
No, they just wanted to heal you.
But like Teddy Long getting up on the apron actually doesn't change whether or not Butch Reed could just come in there and hit an axe handle.
Yeah, Teddy Long, not my favorite manager at this time.
I know. I don't find this iteration of him to be a particularly coherent or interesting one.
This was like doing the homie don't play that from Living Color. Like, I get his heel persona, especially with the skyscrapers and Doom. You know, he's kind of, you know, he's a weasel. He has bad teeth. They call him Peanut Head because he's gone bald and stuff like that. But I always enjoyed the iteration of Doom with Woman a lot more. I always thought Nancy Sullivan was a much, much stronger presence in terms of being evil with Doom, and especially putting them against the Steiners and with the whole Rick Steiner, Robin Green story. But I mean, she was sultry and she had these two large black, and yeah, did play on some insensitive racial stereotypes about dating and whatnot in the South, but it was still just one of those acts where you're like, I believe she's evil enough to get these two jacked dudes to go beat up people for her. I really liked that iteration of Doom a little bit more.
Yeah, agreed. That's all I got. I really did enjoy this. This match was one really nice piece of offense after another really nice piece of offense.
Well, it's your turn, Invader Club, next week, so I'll get that out as soon as you decide. But
I'm thinking it's Perry Saturn's time to shine.
You've had a Perry Saturn Raven match. Are we going Eliminators?
I already did a Perry Saturn Raven match. That is correct. Yeah. All right. So then, no, I don't know what I'm doing then.
Well, it'll be a surprise. I'll put it out on the Twitter feed.
Yeah, I shall find out. Yeah.
Let's wrap it up there. A good short show for us. It's been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word, on X. Follow Chris on his socials at on Instagram at DOCTOR_Nove. That's Dr. Nove. He is also on Spotify. He will plug that in a moment. We are part of the Voices Wrestling Podcasting Network. You can join me every Wednesday over on Fight Game Media as part of the Dynamite Show. We go 20 minutes after the show ends with a thorough deconstruction. This week it was Kevin Ely and myself. Very fun show, I thought. Give it a listen. It drops in your podcatchers the next morning, the audio over, and it's free. Chris has many projects he's doing, many, many sticks and many fires. He's going to tell him about you now.
Absolutely.
I didn't get the dismount on that one. I apologize.
That's
he's
okay.
going to tell them about you. He's going to tell you about them now.
Now is the time for learning about the things that I do when I do stuff. And you can follow the stuff that I do on Instagram. As Jeff mentioned, I'm also on Spotify. Go and listen to some Chris Novembrino music. I definitely appreciate the initial listens. It's tapered off a little bit because it's been a couple months since I put anything out. More will be coming here towards the end of the year. Really, more than listens, I'd love it if you subscribe. So please go over there, subscribe to my Spotify. It's under my name, Chris Novembrino. And if you want lessons, if you want lessons, you need to hit me up on Instagram because that's the only way I'll know about it.
You need to put out more, Chris.
I put out.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Garrett Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.